Actually, you relate to the parshas and the end of Shmos. It's all the dinim on the Beis HaMikdash. You're right here. Your next door neighbor. Gotta know all the dinim. The hair you bought the Beis HaMikdash. And they build the Beis HaMikdash today before Shkia. We gotta know. All the Kalim. These are dinim. Some of them are Harasha. Some of them are dinim of the Duras. Those are the Duras. Mamish, we gotta know. The Harasha is in the Chumash. Okay.
Does the Rosh Hashiva believe we're in Yemos Mashiach? And if so, are there any implications of that?
We're not yet Yemos HaMashiach. Maybe you can call it Aschalta de Gula. The Gemara has a statement in Sanhedrin and the Gemara Megillah that Mohammed Aschalta de Gula. Which Mohammed? So Rashi says, the Mohammeds, who's going to be the balabas over Eretz Yisrael? The Jews had a war with the Arabs, and the Jews won the war, and they're controlling the government in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rashi learned, that's Aschalta de Geula. The Geula, what does Geula mean? What's the definition of Geula? You have to define your terms. The Rabban Chumash defines Geula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash. That's Geula. Ramban writes in the Hagdamah to Chumash Mos. By mistake, they printed the Akdam in the old editions, the old Chumashim, they printed Akdam the Chumash Shmos at the end of Aichi. Now, in the new editions, they print the Akdam in the beginning of Shmos. So either you'll find it the end of Aichi, the beginning of Shmos, the Akdam to the Bir HaRamban on Shmos. He says, Bereshis is the book of all the beginnings, the beginning of the world, the beginning of mankind, the beginning of the Jewish people. Avram Yitzchak Yankov. And Shmos is the book about the first Golos and the Geula therefrom. So then the Ramban asks, how can I say the Geula? The Geula doesn't take place till after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu when they return back to Eretz Yisrael. Geula is when they left Eretz Yisrael, and the Geula is when they come back to Eretz Yisrael. He says, wrong. Geula means when you have a Beis HaMikdash. He said, the Iker tragedy of the Geula is not, it's a tragedy that we live in Chutz Lars, that we went to Chutz Lars, but the Iker tragedy is that in Eretz Yisrael we had what he's paraphrasing an expression from Tanakh, from Sefer Iyov, Soda laka aleo haleihim, the Ere Hashvas Hashchina. When they went into Golus Mitzrayim, they were lacking Soda laka aleo haleihim. They didn't have Hashvas Hashchina. But then when you build a Mishkan, Tuma Tetzaba by Yaakov Kuri, build a Mishkan, that is the Geula. You have the Geula. That's why the Chazanish made a statement. Chazanish was an Eretz Yisrael before Hakamas HaMedina, for Hakamas HaMedina. And he made a statement that this is the end of the Golas, but you still don't have the Geula. So people thought that it was double talk. No, it's not double talk. The end of the Golas, all the Jews can move to Eretz Yisrael. The British are not preventing us from coming in. It's run by the Jewish government. They're welcoming all the Jews. But it's not yet a Geula. A Geula means when you have Hashvas Hashchina. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So at the end of the Golas, we're able to come, but you don't yet have the Geula. So if you know what Geula is, then you can know what Aschalta de Geula is. So Geula, if Geula means Binyan Beis HaMikdash, so the Gemara has in Sanhedrin, and it's the opening line in the Rambam, Hilchos Melachim, Gimel Mitzvahs, Nitztava Yisrael Dichnisosim La'aretz. The Jewish people have three mitzvahs that have to be fulfilled in a specific order. First is L'hamer L'hamelech, to establish a Jewish government over all of Eretz Yisrael. Then L'hachri Zarish Al-Amalek, whoever Amalek is, we assume Amalek is still around. We have not yet succeeded in wiping out Amalek. And then, Livnas Lehem Beis Abchira. So that's what it means. Milchamas Aschalta de Geula. Milchama is, who's going to be, are the British, are the Arabs, are the Turks, who's going to be the balabas over Eretz Yisrael? The Rashi says, when the Jews win the war and they are ruling over Eretz Yisrael, that's the first step in building the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Aschalta de Geula. Hakamas HaMedina is the Aschalta de Geula. So that's what Rashi says. The Chasam Sefer somehow ignored the Rashi. I don't know why. Chasam Sefer understood that every war in the world is Aschalta de Geula. The Chasam Sefer lived in the middle 1800s. Chasam Sefer was the son-in-law of Rabbi Kivega. Chasam Sefer had three wives, one after the other. So the second wife was a daughter of Rabbi Kivega. He was 1 year younger than his father-in-law. And he died a year after his father-in-law. Rabbi Kivega is only 1 year older than his son-in-law. Strange. So the Chasam Sefer, during the lifetime of the Chasam Sefer, he lived in Presburg. He was a Yekke. He was born and bred in Frankfurt. He always signs all of his tshuvas, Moshe HaKotam in Frankfurt. He was very proud of the fact that he was a Yekah, but he was a rabbi in Hungary. But he introduced all the Yekeshim and Hagim into Hungary. So they had Hungarians who had all these Yekahs. They dressed like Yekahs, and they pronounced Hebrew like Yekahs. Everything was different there. So he lived through some Austro-Prussian war, and he assumed every war in the world is Aschalta de Gula. So he has in his, Chassam Sofer wrote a diary, which is printed. It's available on print a long time already. And in the diary, he writes about the wars that are going on, that he has the Reiter, he has a Bar Mitzvah Pshetl that he wrote for his nephew. He has Torahs there, he has history there, he has everything blended in together. Small diary, a small soft cover pamphlet. So in the diary, he writes that there was a discussion, maybe they should be, I think he has, maybe they should be Geuze Tainus, that the war should end. He says, no, all wars are Aschalta de Geula, and then if you pray that the war should end, you're slowing down the Geula process. So this diary of the Chassam Sofer was quoted years later during the First World War. There were Jewish soldiers who were losing their lives in the First World War, on both sides. The Jews on both sides of the war, shooting at each other. They were each, well, the Jews were in the army of their country. They were serving in the army. So there was a discussion, maybe they should be Geuze Tainus, maybe they should fast, maybe they should be Mispala, that the war should end. So the Minkatcher was a Hungarian. So he has the Minchas Haluza. So he says, you're not allowed to pray that the war should end. All the wars in the world are Aschalta de Gula. He quotes the Chassam Sofer. And you're not allowed to pray to slow down the Gula process. He would be the first one to say, the Minkatcher, who was the anti-Zionist, he'd be the first one to say, the Mechemet HaShechur, Mechemet Yom Kippurim, all the wars in Israel, that's for sure Aschalta de Gula. So he quotes the Chassam Sofer, there's a din. Aschalta de Gula, you're not allowed to pray, not allowed to slow down the Gula process. He said, that's a din. Not allowed to slow down the Gula process. They didn't think you have to have a Novi to define whether it's Aschalta de Gula or not. It's a halacha. Chassam Sofer thought there are halachas that depend on Aschalta de Gula. He thought that the Austro-Prussian war was an Aschalta de Gula. He didn't have a Novi who told him. If you have halachas, so it has to be in the power of the Rabbanim to size up the situation. But the Pashto certainly is that the wars of who's going to be the Balabas over Eretz Yisrael, if the Jews win, when the Jews win the war, that's called Aschalta de Gula. That's what Rashi says on the Gemara. That's the first step in Binyan Beis Hamikdash. Binyan Beis Hamikdash is the Geula. Soda laka aleo haleihim. Ramban paraphrases that Lashon HaPasuk from Iyov, Sefer Iyov. And the Hakomas HaMalchus, Jewish government, that's the first step. Lamed lehamelach, achre zav shalom lalak, vivnes lehem beis hamchir. What was the question that I was answering? What was I supposed to answer?
If Rabbi believes that it's the, if we're in Yimos Mashiach.
Ikvah said the Mashiach, yeah. I don't know.
Any implications of that?
I think no. Ikvah said the Mashiach, I don't think so. The Aruch HaShulchan talks about Tefillin d'Rabbein Tam. Rabbein Tam came up with a whole Chiddush that the Seder HaParshas had to read the Gemara. The Gemara tells you what's the Seder HaParshas. So we all wear tefillin d'Rashi. Rabbein Tam came up with a chiddush that changed the Seder HaParshas. So the Aruch HaShulchan has sources from the Zohar, and he says he thinks that the Zohar has both Rashi and Rabbein Tam, and he says based on the Zohar, his impression is when it's Ikvus of the Mashiach, then it's time to switch to Rabbein Tam. Rabbein Tam switched because he felt that it's Ikvus of the Mashiach. Rabbein Tam lived a few centuries ago, almost 1,000 years ago. He thinks that that's Ikvus of the Mashiach. Ikvus of the Mashiach sounds like you hear the footsteps of Mashiach. And our generation is such nisim and afloes. You people were born, there was already a Medina. No one ever thought there was going to be a Medina. It was such a Milam and Atel. I spoke earlier today. And everything in Eretz Yisrael, every Malchama, every war that they won, everything is Milam and Atel. This is Mamash Ikvus of the Mashiach. But the Pashto says, aside that, the Aruch HaShulchan claims Rabbein Tam changed and said that tefillin because he held the Ikvus of the Mashiach. That's a shver avot. You don't have any dina based on Ikvus of the Mashiach. You have dina based on Aschalta de Gula that the Chassam Sofer came up. Haschalta de Gula, also you have a right to establish a yontif. That's what the Nesivos writes. Nesivos has a commentary. Nesivos is a fantastic sefer. I used to have a judge. He used to attend my shiurim. I used to give a weekly shiur for Balabatim. Now I give a few other weekly shiur. So he told me the achron that I quoted most often was the Nesivos. I don't know. My impression was the achron who's most often quoted in printed svarim is the Pnei Yeshua. When you want to make this, he tells me the one I quote more often is the Nesivos. And the Nesivos has a lot of svarim. He has a commentary on Megillas Esther also. It's called Megillas Torah. When you look in the big Mikros Gedolos, they have that on the bottom of the page. See, he claims there's another din, Aschalta de Geula, that the Chachamim made a yontif of Purim because they felt that this was Aschalta de Geula. Says you have a right to make a yontif if you think it's Aschalta de Geula. And then he claims, and if you realize you made a mistake, so you abolish the yontif. The world doesn't come to an end. You don't have to have a Navi to tell you in advance. He claims that they made a mistake in the days of Mordechai Esther. They thought it was Aschalta de Geula, and it wasn't, so that's why they changed the nature of Purim. Originally, they instituted Purim with the Nisa Meloche, and then they removed the Nisa Meloche when they realized that's not Aschalta de Geula. So that part, others disagree. They think, no, they made a Yontel because they thought it was Aschalta de Geula, and it was Aschalta de Geula, not that they made a mistake. What way was Aschalta de Geula? That's another discussion. Why do they think it's going to be Aschalta de Geula? It's another long story. Yeah.
What's about the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where they say, "Ein lecha ketz megula mizeh," the definition of Geula?
The Gemara is not saying the definition of Geula. The Gemara says, "Ein lecha this, my grandson, my oldest grandchild. He learns in which yeshiva?
Elon
Moreh. Elon Moreh. That's in Eretz Yisrael." So the Gemara says, "Ein lecha ketz megula mizeh." That the pasuk says in Navi that the barren desert area in Eretz Yisrael is going to sprout, and trees are going to grow, and grass is going to grow, everything is going to grow. That's a simon that you're holding by the ketz. So that's a kozman that the Jews didn't have a medina. Eretz Yisrael was a desolate desert area. Nothing grew. Then when the Jews came, everything started to grow. So that's what the Gemara says. This is a simon that you're holding by the ein lecha ketz megula mizeh. That shows we're holding by the ketz hayamin. Yeah. That's what we see. Well, all the words of the prophets are being fulfilled. I have an acquaintance who's a tour guide. Yes, Micha from Skokie Yeshiva, and he's a tour guide here for Parnassah. So he told us, he was once taking us on a tour. He told us that he once went with a group of Japanese, religious Japanese, not interested in converting. Every year they come, a group of Japanese come to visit the tour in Eretz Yisrael. So the Japanese tour guide was telling the Japanese people, look, every prophecy in Tanakh is being fulfilled. And the tour guide was quoting the psukim from Tanakh and showing them, look what happened over here, look what happened over here. So this religious fellow with the smicha gives a krechts and he says to the Japanese tour guide, you understand it very well. There's so many secular Jews in Eretz Yisrael, don't realize that every word of the prophets is being fulfilled. So the Japanese man tells him, that's what it says in Tanakh also. It says in Shir HaMaalos, Oz Yom HaBagoyim Higdol Hashem La'asos Simeila. Then the next pasuk says, Higdol Hashem La'asos Imanu, Hayinu Simecha. First the Goyim will realize, Higdol Hashem La'asos Simeila. Then afterwards the Jews will realize. I never realized that that's what it said in Shir HaMaalos. The Japanese tour guide pointed out.
A lot of the Gedolim, or most of them that got involved in the issue, came out against Land for Peace, especially by Gush Katif. If the real intention is to save Jewish life, and you think that it will bring peace, or maybe it has a chance to, so is it us, or are the people that did it wrong?
Whenever you wage a war, Minchas Chinah points out, whenever you wage a war, b'derech ha-teva, people are going to lose their lives. It's going to be a miraculous war if none of the Jewish soldiers are going to lose their lives. So the Torah has sometimes a machemes mitzvah, you mechuyev to go to war. And we know in advance that people are going to lose their lives. So you can't say, the Minchas Chinah says, you can't say, b'kuach nefesh is doicha, achoyvas melchama. Then you never have a machemes mitzvah, unless HaKadosh Baruch is going to promise that no Jewish people are going to lose their lives. He doesn't make such promises. But the only time there's a chiyev to do a machemes mitzvah is if you're pretty sure that you're going to win. If you're not sure you're going to win, then you know in advance you're going to lose. Like in where did they all lose their lives?
Matsada,
right. So the tour guide takes you there, and he says that these people in Masada didn't follow the rabbis. The rabbi said, we lost the war already, so surrender. So they felt, no, you never surrender till the last Jewish man loses his life. So that's ridiculous. What is he? Harig l'yavar. So there's only a mitzvah Muhammad if you're pretty sure, you can never be 100% sure, if you're almost positive that you're going to win the war. If you're not sure if you're going to win, then there's no chiyah Muhammad. So that's, it says in the Rav Veldeville Soloveitchik also points out that it says in the Haftarah, Bishalach, I think, it says, Zvulan Macherf Nafshalamus, Naftola Amaram Esoda, that the soldiers in the army went to fight knowing that they may lose their lives. Amcherf Nafshalamus. The soldiers have to go to the army to fight even though they know. And whenever you send in the first battalion, always gets killed. The first group of soldiers go in to the enemy, they're always going to get killed. The second group sit. So everyone says, I don't want to go. Pikoch Nefesh is Deich. You can't say, Pikoch Nefesh is Deich Muhammad, you never go to war. But whenever you're pretty sure that you're going to win. So that's the Shaila. With all of the piguim that they have, life is pretty calm in Eretz Yisrael. They're printing books and they're developing things, technological developments and medical development advancements. The society is going forward, unbelievable. Everything is, people are making a parnasa, a lot of people are making a living, people live a pleasant life. It's tragic that every day they kill someone else, it's tragic, but are we losing the war or are we winning the war? So I think if you ask the public, Rover the people feel that we're winning the war. We're losing here and there, we're losing people's lives. And even if we would make an agreement, even if it would, there's no one to make an agreement with. So that's why there's no land for peace. But even if there would be someone to make an agreement with, and they would keep their word, which they wouldn't keep their word, even if they would keep their word, there would be peaceful. But we're winning the war the way it is now. It's a little bit uncomfortable. Basically, we're winning the war. So if you feel that you're winning the war, then you have to wage Mechemes Mitzvah, even though you know you're going to lose a lot of lives. And this is one of the Mechemes Mitzvah, to maintain all of Eretz Yisrael under Jewish sovereignty. That's a Mechemes Mitzvah, to maintain Eretz Yisrael under Jewish sovereignty. There's a Mechemes Mitzvah, yeah.
What's the status of disgraced Rebbeim's Torah? Like, is it mutter to learn it? Like their Sfarim that they had before, if they got caught up in a big scandal or an Avera that they did?
The Halacha says, "Amarab daimel malach Hashem tzvakas hivakshet Torah mipihu." What does it mean, mipihu? So Jastrow was a function as a conservative rabbi in America, but he's not saying Torah mipihu; just translating words. He's not telling us his ideas. So everybody uses Jastrow. That's not called yivakshet Torah mipihu. But a rabbi who writes hashkafe or musar, he's putting his heart and soul into it. He's saying halacha, he's beginning his contribution, he's putting things together. So it's not right. You really shouldn't study those books. You really shouldn't listen to those tapes, and you shouldn't study those books that were written by people who were disgraced. That's our Rabbeinu Daimel Malach Hashem Tzvakas. We don't know too much, what is a malach like? We're not sure, but in English you say the person is angelic. We don't know what an angel looks like, we don't know what an angel looks like, but you can tell what that person. He was having an affair with the women, that the angels don't have affairs with them. That's having an affair with men, so the angels don't have that. No, that's not angelic. No, they're different kinds of scandals. Or stealing money. The angels don't steal money. If he stole money from the yeshiva, then you shouldn't read his books. Very unfortunate. Human beings.
What does Rosh Hashanah think about different options for what we should be doing with our summers between like the learning programs versus like, and specifically about like how co-ed camp, whether there's an element of kiruv or not, and we should be going to these places, yes or no?
There is a mitzvah to do kiruv. You get involved in kiruv, you are running a risk that you may not succeed in being mekarev them. They may be mekarev you, and then they pull you down. You know, some people get involved in kiruv and they lose out. You have to be careful. Not everyone is can be so sure of himself that he's going to be successful in the kibbutz, that he's not going to fall in. He may be pulled down instead of succeeding in pulling the other people up. Sometimes a person feels that he has to go. Look, Rabbi Shmuel learned in Eretz Yisrael, and they decided to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Babel to establish yeshivas because they knew that the people were violating Basa B'cholav and Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha. The people didn't know anything. And they both moved to Babel. Each one was successful. They established two big yeshivas, and Torah flourished because of Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara says, "Mechiyosu Rab leBavel." The beginning of Gittin, everything changed. Everything changed. He started teaching Torah to the masses. Yeah, sometimes a person feels that he'll have a divine assistance, but not everybody will. I don't know. You're pretty young. You can spend another year or two learning in the yeshiva. You don't have to go into Kirov yet. A lot of the boys, let's say, in the yeshiva, they go every week. There's a whole group that go every week. There's something in NCS. Every single week, you give off a Shabbos. I can understand 4 Shabbatonim a year, but every single week, so Masa Esa Gamanocha Lebesi. When are you gonna? You want to do well in college. You want to do well in learning. You don't give everything away. First, you have to take care of your own needs. Then you help out other people. I don't think that makes sense. An older person, okay. An older person, he wants to do this for a living, okay. So that's a married person, okay. Makes sense. You should go into Kiruv. He's married, so his wife will watch over him. But a younger person to go to a co-ed camp to do Kiruv, he may fall in. Not so smart. You should try to learn. These are the best years of your life. One of the big thinkers said, it's a shame that youth is wasted on the young. When they're young, that's when your mind is bright and sharp. That's when you can learn a lot. So learn now. Learn now. Then you'll do the kiruv later. After you learn a lot, then you'll be able to do. The more you know, the more you can present Torah and Judaism in a better fashion. Even though you're not going to teach the people the answer to the Marsha's Kasha, the answer to Rebbe Kivega's Kasha, they don't know what the Kasha is. You got to teach elementary things, but the more you know, the bigger you have a hekif in your mind, so the better you'll be able to explain what Judaism is all about. So people that learn many years in the yeshiva, they have a lot of knowledge, and they can present the elementary, the ABC of Judaism in a better light. When I was a little boy, I was fortunate. I was born in the middle of the Second World War. Then after the war, my rebbes who were teaching me Chumash and Siddur and Haskalah's Gemara were big Tamina Chachamah. They were refugees who came after the war. They knew all the Gemaras by heart. So then when they taught us Chumash and Rashi, now a lot of times the rebbes are wet behind the ear. They themselves don't know the Gemaras that Rashi's quoting. They don't know what it means. They're going to mistranslate Psukim and mistranslate Rashi's quoting Gemaras. I had rebbes who were big Tamina Chachamah. I was lucky. The Prima Gordon was a Malamed of little children. Prima Gordon was one of the greatest Goyim that we ever had. He wrote on Yeridea and Arachaim. He taught little children. Malamed Tinoikas. He taught little children in Germany. The greater the Talmid Chacham is, so the better he's equipped to teach elementary things. So, I don't know your particular case, but in general, I would assume it's always better for younger people to spend more time learning and then to go into Kiruv. Be more successful.
The Gemara in Sukkah and Yoma, when it talks about letters Sofit, it suggests that a Navi can't introduce something new to the Torah, but he can reintroduce something. And why in the Gemara, when it talks about when Moshe died and Ezra and Kenaz reintroduced all the halachos, why didn't we have Nevuah reintroduce something? It wasn't new, it was lost. And why can the Nevuah reintroduce as opposed to needing Tokul to reintroduce that?
Uh-huh. Interesting question. I don't know. Have to look in the Gemaras. Sounds like an interesting question. Don't know.
It's quoted in the name of the Rebbe that he believes that halacha is the ikra of emuna. Can you please explain what exactly you mean by that and why you think that is?
I'm not sure what it means either. I never heard that expression. Halacha is the ikra of emuna.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Misquoted that.
I don't know what it means. Yeah, Munu, we have a historical tradition about Ma'amin HaSinai, Kriyas Yamsuf, Esamakas. We have a tradition. The Rambam quotes from the Kuzari. Kuzari was by Rabbi Yehuda Levi, was the Talmud of the Rif. So the Rambam quotes from the Kuzari that the Christian religion is based on a small group of disciples that supposedly Osa Huish had, and they saw him do all these miracles. But the Jewish religion is based on the historical tradition of several million people who saw all there were 600,000 Jewish men between the age of 20 and 60, probably 600,000 women between the age of 20 and 60. I'm over 60. I'm not the only one over 60, maybe in this room. There are many people over 60. There are many people younger than 20 in this room. So and then there was Erev Rav. So there must have been several million people who witnessed Esamakas, Kriyas Yamsu, Ma'amin HaSinai. And they told over everything that they saw. That's how we know the authenticity of our religion. It was a historical reporting. It's like a person today will deny that George Washington, the first president of the United States, is there anybody alive today who remembers that George Washington was the first president? You don't need anybody alive. All the history books, everybody wrote that George Washington was the first president. We have historical evidence to that. So we have historical evidence that was just meant. I knew all of my four grandparents, my father's parents, my mother's parents. I was brought up part of the time by my mother's parents because we lived in Philadelphia. After the fifth grade, there was no day school for me. My parents sent me to New York to stay by my grandparents for a while, and they sent me to yeshiva there. I knew all of my four grandparents. They're honest people. When they said a joke, they said it's a joke. And when they said something that was not a joke, they told us what the traditions were. They heard from their parents, heard from their parents all the way back. And these were honest people. They weren't shikurim, and they weren't kidding. They didn't tell Baba Meisim. They told the Baba Meisim. They said, this is a Baba Meisim. When they told over, there was Esamakas, there was Kriyas Yamsa, and there was Ma'amin HaSinai. These are historical facts that were witnessed by millions of people. So our emunah is based on the historical traditions that we got from our parents and our grandparents all the way back. The other religions are based on historical evidence that was witnessed by a small group of people. So we assume that our history is stronger than their history.
How important is it to make Aliyah before university? Say if we were going back for 3 odd years.
What do you say? Does it make sense to make Aliyah?
As in, is it really important to make it before we go to university?
If your parents live in Chutz La'aretz, you should leave your parents. It helps for shidduchim purposes if your parents help you. I belong to the parents' union. Parents really have in mind the best interest of their children. They're not enemies of the children. They usually have more life's experience than the children. The children are 20, the parents are 40. The parents know better. A lot of times a boy falls in love with a girl, a girl falls in love with a boy, and the parents explain, this is terrible, this is not the right person for you. And the boy or the girl, a lot of times they're blinded, they're young, they're in love, but they don't realize that it doesn't make any sense. It's a good idea to have your parents help you out, to give you assistance by the shidduchim. I don't know if it's so smart to go on aliyah without your parents. The poskim have a machlokes, is it permissible to go on aliyah if the parents don't want you to go? If there's a conflict between kibbutz av and moving Eretz Yisrael. So the chayodom wrote a special sefer, I forgot the name, a thin sefer, all Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. He said, he writes, he wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, but he wasn't able to. So he wrote the sefer, at least, to talk about the dinim. So he has one chapter, is one permitted to move to Eretz Yisrael against the wishes of his parents, and in violation of kibbutz. He interprets a Medrash Rabbah in the beginning of Lech Lecha, only you, I give you permission to leave your father, other people, I don't give permission. He claims that that's the pshat. No one else is allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael if it's in violation of kibbutz avim. Most of the poskim don't agree with his pshat in the Medrash Rabbah. They say that's not part of kibbutz av. Each person has his own life. A person wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, so he's allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's what most assume. That it's not if it's in conflict with kibbutz av. So you have a right to move to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, but just for your own advancement in life. How are you going to get married? How are you going to take care of things? I would think it's always best to live with your parents until you get married, and then you make your own life. I would think so.
There are many different minhagim as to how long and about one's payas. What does the Rav recommend for la lacha? What should do?
We usually assume that there's an inyan of a hida mitzvah in a mitzvah. A mitzvah saseh, you say, do, he do. And a mitzvah loy saseh, as long as you don't violate the aver by hook or by crook. So what's shaykh a hida in a loy saseh? It's a pay, so it's not a mitzvah to a pay. It's a loy saseh, the asikonim loy galechum. Or pasroshim loy galechum. So we usually assume that it doesn't make sense to have a hida. So we don't understand why the Hasidim have these long payas, but the Sfaradim have these long payas. So the Sfaradim have, the Sfaradim usually have all the traditions back from the days of the Tanoim, back to the days of the Gemara. So apparently this was a very old minhag to have long payas. I don't know.
Maybe isn't it a Tosfos Nazir?
That what?
That the minhag was to leave the payas, not cut payas the first time you cut your kids' hair. It's Tosfos Nazir. It seems like it was a minhag back then as well.
I don't know. No, the Gemara is talking about a woman is allowed to, one opinion of the Gemara, a woman is allowed to shave off payas, but it's not right on little children to shave it. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have what the Hasidim call payas. It means not to shave off the hair, these payas.
Right, but it means it as a minhag, no? Like on little kids, the minhag was to not cut the payas at that time, when the first time they cut the hair.
Yeah, so what does it mean? Mean to leave.
It seems like it was the minhag. Meaning there was a minhag kadum.
Is that what Tosfos means? To have long payas like that, like the Hasidim, like this, right?
I don't know the first time you cut your hair. Your kid's hair.
There was a minhag by the Sfaradim. The minhag started in the days of the Beis Yosef to have an eretz by the Sfaradim, not to give the child a haircut till he's 3 years old. That's a chinuch for payas. Because if you give him a haircut before three, so it won't be noticeable that you're leaving any payas. If you leave him, if you leave the hair growing till three, then it'll be noticeable that you left the payas. No, that was a Sfaradish minhag. Now all of a sudden it became, all the Ashkenazim are picking up the Sfaradish minhag, yeah.
What about brisker payas? Like some people are machmir to have it down here, or past the ear.
Yeah.
Different things like that. Are those...
The Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber writes, as a matter of a chumrah, you should have till the end of the ear. But he says, the Mechaber writes that that's a chumrah. So Rameir Arik was one of the major poskim in the 1900 in Galicia. So he writes, he doesn't think that he means the bottom of the soft part of the ear. He thinks the bottom of the hard part of the ear. He says that like half an inch higher than the bottom of the ear to the bottom of the hard part. And he said, and that's a chumrah. That's a chumrah. Got to be careful not to cut off your pants. Yep.
When it comes to a ger toshav, is there just a heter for them to be able to live in Israel with the Jews when we have a society, or is there an inherent value to help run a society?
To have a ger toshav? Yeah, the ger toshav has certain dinim are different from the other nochrim. It's a mitzvah l'achyosa to give mitzvah. There's no mitzvah to give mitzvah to the nochrim in HaTorah. In the Rabbanon sometimes, we find some Ani Yaakov and Ani Yisrael. But as a get Toshav, the Gemara says, mitzvah l'hach yosef. It's a mitzvah to give him stock if he needs. Dinim of Hari Miklot apply to get Toshav a little bit. There are a few dinim, not too many, but the get Toshav has a separate status. Not only that he's allowed of Yimcheyeshi b'kebecha, not only is called the get Toshav, we permitted to let him live in Eretz Yisrael, but it's a little more than that. Probably, yeah, not every non-Jew is mukhiv to convert, to become Jewish. They recognize the God of the Jewish people, okay? So they can become a ger toshav, not mukhiv to become Jewish. It's quite a commitment. To obligate oneself to observe all the mitzvahs is quite an obligation. To become a ger toshav, that's more reasonable. To observe the Shevet mitzvahs b'nei nech. That's a kasha that the latest Sforim are bothered with from the early 1900s. What do you mean the ger toshav accepts upon himself to observe the Shevet mitzvah? What is he accepting? Is mechuyav anyway to observe the Shevet mitzvahs? So what's the significance of his Kabbalah? What do you mean he accepts in the presence of the Bezna of three Jews to observe the Shevet mitzvah? Is mechuyav anyway to observe it? It's So they give, so Rabbi Yosef Engel gives the suggestion, Rabbi Eliezer, they're about the same time, the early 1900s. Rabbi Yosef Engel suggests that the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that Omad Vaymoided Eretz Roa Vayata Goyim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Roa, the Ulm Yisraelim are not observing the Sheva Mitzvahs that he gave them. Vayata Goyim, Omad Vehita Lahem. So he said to the Goyim, you don't have to keep it anymore. The Gemara says, how can that be? Because the Goyim violated the Sheva Mitzvah, so that's why they're off the hook. That's why they don't have to observe them anymore. It does make sense. The Gemara says no. What it means is that even if they observe the Sheva Mitzvah, they won't get reward like a Mitzvah V'yosa. They'll get reward like an Eni Mitzvah V'yosa. So Rabbi Yosef Engel says, so if someone is a Ger Toshav, he commits himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvah, then we treat him, and he observes the Sheva Mitzvah, then we treat him like a Mitzvah V'yosa. He'll get more schar. A slight, a nafkamina for schar and adam abo. Rabbi Eliezer has a different suggestion also, based on a whole interpretation of a Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer has an hilchas tefillin, wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed. He has a fantastic tshuva. Rabbi Eliezer always, everything is an ilui, everything is iluyish, everything is ge'onish by the Rabbi Eliezer. So he explains that the Ger Toshav who accepts upon himself to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs is obligated to observe him with all Abizrahus in its broadest form. So the Moshul, he has to observe not to worship Avodah Zarah, so whatever is related to Avodah Zarah, he's obligated to observe. So there's even a discussion in Machlokes HaTanoim, maybe he has to observe Shabbos. Because Kol HaMechal Shabbos Befer Eski Kilo Evid Avodah Zarah. The one who observes Shabbos is testifying that he believes in the story of creation. One who doesn't observe Shabbos is if he's denying the story of creation. So there's a Machlokes HaTanoim increases to what extent does the Ger Toshav have to observe Shabbos. And the other mitzvahs also, all the Sheva mitzvahs have been enough. The Ger Toshav, because he accepted it upon himself, has to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs in a more enhanced form. All the Abizrahus he has to observe. That's quite a chiddush. But we don't have any Ger Toshav today. The Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes the Gemara, Bizman Sheina Yevel Noig, you can't have Ger Toshav, based on the Pasuk in Chumash. The Ravid reinterprets the whole Gemara. The Ravid says it doesn't mean, usually the Ravid has Asag on the Rambam. Usually the Rambam is shver. The Ravid is masik because the Gemara doesn't say like the Rambam. Here the Rambam is innocent. He just quotes the Gemara. There's no Ger Toshav as much as the Evel Noig. So the Ravid came up with a whopper of a new interpretation that it doesn't mean that. So the Ravid is problematic. But the Rambam just quotes the Gemara. As much as the Evel Noig, there's no Ger Toshav. So that's why we don't have any Ger Toshav. When they, for Shnas HaShemitah, they instituted many years already, instituted the Heter Mechira, that they sell the land in Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews, and they rely in the 1600s they came up with, the Sfaradish Gedolim came up with this kula. If you sell the land to a non-Jew, so the laws of Shemitah don't apply. People think that Rav Kook invented it. Rav Kook didn't invent it. It was in the 1600s, and then in Eretz Yisrael in the late 1800s, when the Jews started moving back to Eretz Yisrael, so they realized they have no choice. There was such a big Shas HaTchak. So the Badats and the Eda Haredis told the Jews they need a Heter Mechira, but they didn't want to touch it. They told them they should go to the Rabbi in Yafo. When the Rabbi in Yafo passed away, so they needed a new rabbi, so that's when Rav Kook came. So that was part of his job, to see the Heter Mechira. Like in Manhattan, the rabbi in the Jewish center was the one Rabbi Dr. Lamb. He was the rabbi at the time when they made the Erev Manhattan. So whoever took over the rabbinical position in the Jewish center says part of his responsibility to supervise the Erev in Manhattan, or the young Israel of Flatbush. Rabbi Shachman supervised the Erev in Flatbush years ago when he was the rabbi in young Israel. So after he moved to Eretz Yisrael, whoever took over the young Israel of Flatbush, that was part of the job description. He has to supervise the Erev in Flatbush. So that's what happened here in Eretz Yisrael. The rabbi in Yafo made the Heter Mechira for the farmers. Then when he passed away, Rav Kook came from Europe. He was the rabbi in Yafo, so that's part of the job. He has to supervise the Heter Mechira. So there were always those who opposed to the Heter Mechira. There's an Issa Lois Sochanim. You're not allowed to give land and Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. So Rav Kook writes that one of the members of his Bezna and Yafa came up with a suggestion. Instead of selling the land to a Christian Nochri, they should sell it to a Muslim, because the Muslim basically believe in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noyach. Some of them even observe them. Some of them believe in it, they don't observe. Some of them really observe it. So one of the Rabbanim in his Bezna said that even though they never officially accepted in the presence of the Bezna three Jews to be Ger Toshav, maybe you don't need a Kabbalah. Even though Imakabim Ger Toshav is Manshei Erev Noyeg, maybe since it's Yadua Lakol that the Islam subscribes to the Shemitz Menech, so maybe all the Muslims have a din of a Ger Toshav, so maybe it's better to do the Het every seventh year when they renew the Het to Mechira, so they always add on a new Knesh, a new Chumrah. So during Rav Kook's lifetime, the Het to Mechira started before Rav Kook with the previous rabbi from Yafa, who was a holy tzaddik. I forgot his name. He was the one who put out the Siddur HaGro and books on Kabbalah. He was into Kabbalah. So Rav Kook took over. So he introduced into the Het to Mechira, they should sell it to a Muslim. Maybe they have a din of Ger Toshav. A Chiddush. So then it was a problem. If they have a din of their Ger Toshav, then Amir Eliakim on Shabbos is Anisa Deraisa. So who is Gercha Hashem B'Sharecha? If it means a Ger Tzedek, he's Atta. Atta doesn't only mean the people alive today in Maimon Hasina. Atta means all of us today. Anyone who's Jewish is Atta. So Gercha Hashem B'Sharecha means a Ger Toshav. What do you mean? So here some of the Tanaim say Ger Toshav is obligated to observe Shabbos as an enhancement of the observance of Avodah Zarah, because in the Chol Shabbos, the first Edina Kovid Avodah Zarah. So we paskin not, so he doesn't observe Shabbos at all. So what does it mean, Ger Chashev B'Sharecha? So Tosfos says in Yevamos, Ger Chashev B'Sharecha, Amir Eliyachim to a Ger Toshav is an Issa Deraisa. So all the coolness that we have a Shabbos guy to do Melachas for us, that's only Mutav, he's not a Ger Toshav. If the Shabbos guy is a Ger Toshav, it's an Issa Deraisa to ask him to do a Melacha, and there's no Heter. So Rav Kook gets into trouble over here. He says, maybe we should have a Hidur to sell Eretz Yisrael to a Muslim, because the Muslim have a din of a Ger Toshav. There's no Issa Lo Sechonim selling Karka to a Goy, because it's a Ger Toshav. Im Chayesh B'Kirbecha, may sell him Karka, but if it's din of a Ger Toshav, then you can't use a Muslim as a Shabbos Goy. So he has a Shveret Tshuva. All of his Tshuvas are very normal. This is a Doichik, a big Doichik in the Tshuva. He splits between the din of Ger Toshav for selling land in Eretz on the din of Ger Toshav for Shabbos purposes. So he says, maybe only when you get to letting him own land in Eretz, he sells din of Ger Toshav. But when you get to Hilcha Shabbos, Amir Eliyakim being Deraisa, there he doesn't have a din of Ger Toshav. So he says, it's a shvera tshuva. Most of the tshuvas for Akuk are very traditional, very normal style. Chazon Ish used to recommend that people who are learning Eredeya, they should learn of Cook's tshuvas and they should see how to pass mashalas. They'll pick up the style of psa. But this happens to be a Shveret Shuvah. It was a big Shas HaTrak. He wasn't happy himself. On his deathbed, Rav Kook on his deathbed, he told the people he died, I think, from cancer. He said he thinks he's dying. He was suffering. Thinks he's suffering because of the Het to Mechira. He didn't invent it. That was part of the job. The rabbi before him introduced the Het to Mechira. The Gedolim in Europe approved of the Het to Mechira. Bitzkal Chan and all the other Gedolim, they approved of it. But he, on his deathbed, he said, maybe he's being punished by Hashemayim. He suffered a lot before he died because of the Het to Mechira. Mm-hmm.
So on that note, what do you recommend for Shvius?
What do I recommend?
How to observe Shvius here.
As a consumer?
Yeah.
Not as a farmer. No, as a consumer, there's not such a problem. There is a machlokes where the Meshumer is also Bachila. The last Tosis in Yevamos. Last daf in Yevamos. Tosis quotes Rabbi Natan. Meshumah means if you keep the fences up and you don't let anybody, you're not mafke the pears, you don't let anybody take it. Rabbi Natan interprets in Yemar that Meshumah is also Bachila. So most of the Mishanim don't pass on like that. So Chazon Ish says we don't pass on like that. We pass Meshumah is Mutta Bachila. Then there's an opinion that Nevad is also Bachila. If they did Avodah Sakarka, and they cause the vegetables to grow, that there's a penalty also. We don't pass like that either. Rova pasim hold mishumer is muta bachila, never is muta bachila. So the whole thing is a chumra, midas chasinus. So that's why they say Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to tell in the yeshiva in Kol Torah, where he was the Rosh Yeshiva, they said they shouldn't get, they shouldn't use papers that were relying on Het HaMechira. But when the children go home, all the parents rely on Het HaMechira. So they said, don't give the parents a hard time. Mikra din, that's the din. Meshumer is mutter, and Heban is mutter. There used to be a rabbi who was the head of a girls' school in Eretz Yisrael. So every 7 years, they would ask Rav Shlomo Zalman, what should he tell the girls when they go home? In the school, they give lunches, not relying on Het HaMechira. Rav Shlomo Zalman told them all the time, tell them that they can rely on the Het HaMechira, but don't say it in my name. Don't get me into trouble. And then, last time, he asked them, so he said, and you can say it in my name. So he said, what changed? He said, my wife passed away. Because my wife was alive, I didn't want to throw stones at my windows. My wife doesn't have to suffer because I have a psak l'hoka. My wife passed away, so I'll take the stones for the window. So you can say it in my name. They can tell the girls, they can eat by the parents' home. There's no problem. It's a chumrah. The whole thing is a chumrah. Not to eat nevin and not to eat meshumar. Mikvadin, it's really mutter. Abchan Kanievsky printed a letter that the Chazon Ish wrote to a mekurev of his that he should be machmer on the shumar. But that's a mekurev of his. Mikvadin, he writes in the Chazon Ish, Mikvadin, we pass him a shumar as mutter. Rofa paskim. We always, whenever there's machlekes, yochid verab, malochi kerabi. So why all of a sudden we're looking for all the chumras? The one is on a madrega, the midas chassidus, and the curve of the Chazon Ish. So he recommends it should be machmer. But the whole nation is not mechuyev to be machmer.
So, to what extent are you chayev to pursue chumras as much as possible?
There is a din sofik deraisa lechumr. So, as a midas chassidus, if a person is on that level, a person is observes, he doesn't talk Lashon Hara, he doesn't cheat in business, and he always comes to Minyan on time, and he does everything else right. So he treats, whenever there's a machlokes, so we treat it as a safek koldehu. It's nowhere near 50-50. If there's a machlokes haposkim, and the miut say l'chum, and the roib say l'kula, so as a midas chassidus, we would consider that an act of safek deraisa l'chum. But that's only by medvam amar, if the person is on the madrega to observe a midas chassidus. Is he on the madrega? He talks Lashon Hara, he cheats in business, he doesn't come to shul on time, he abridges the psukadism, he does everything else he does wrong. All of a sudden, if it's a chumah that everyone's going to notice, then he's bragging, he hasn't been a chassidus. That's not, it says in the Gemara, if you observe a midas chassidus and you tell people about it, then the Gemara says you lose the schar. You lose the schar from the midas chassidus. The Taz has like that in Hilchas Tainus. There are days, the Shulchan Aruch has certain days that are called Tainus Tzadikim. Rosh Chodesh Av is the Yortzeit of Aaron HaKoyen, Zayin Oder, this week Zayin Oder. So the Tzadikim fast on these days. So the Taz says, if somebody asks you, are you fasting? So if they have to know whether there's a minyan on the sun to lay by Chal, so you tell them I'm fasting, you can count on me. If they're not laying by Chal, well, the guy's writing an almanac, has to know, he's writing an encyclopedia, has to know who's fasting or not. So he says, you tell them a lie. You tell them a lie, then I'm not fasting. He quotes the Gemara like that. That when Reb Shoma Levi died and he went to heaven, so they asked him, they said, oh, Reb Shoma Levi is known as a big tzaddik. So they asked him, Nirasa Hakeshes Biyamecha? Rainbow. Did the rainbow ever appear during your lifetime? He said, yes. So he says, then you're not the holy tzaddik that we thought you were, because Reb Shoma only shows a rainbow when the Dor deserves to be punished, Kloya. And the rainbow, the Rabban Shalom promised, the rainbow is the Os HaBris, he's not going to destroy this generation. So if you would have been such a big holy tzaddik, the rainbow would never have been, never appeared during your lifetime, because you would have been Megan on the door. The Gemara says the truth of the matter was the rainbow never appeared during his lifetime. But he didn't want to be Machzik Toiv Adaratzma, so he told the angels a lie. He told them a lie. So the Taz said, you see from the Gemara, that if it's no one else's business, it's none of their business whether I'm fasting or not. So you should tell them a lie. Tell them that you're not fasting. Tell them that you're eating. Unless they need you for a minyan. Okay. But that's a lot of times people do amidas chassidus. And they do it in order that everybody should see that they're doing so. That's not right. Then you lose the whole schar for the amidas chassidus. You're supposed to do bitzina.
Does Rebbe think there's a danger in historicizing Gemara, or is it important to get the full picture to understand the context?
There is a big danger. People will... Rav Soloveitchik was very opposed to interpreting halachas based on... You have to know the historical background in order to understand what the din is. Sometimes it's very important. But then to say that the din only applies in the case where the historical background applied, so that's ridiculous. Rav Soloveitchik, I just spoke around the corner here, so I just spoke there, that he said that during the Second World War, the American government knew that the German government had their scientists, their physicists, trying to figure out how atomic energy works. And if they would have made an atom bomb, then they would have controlled the whole world. They would have won the war, they would control the whole world. So they spent a lot of money that Einstein and a whole group of geniuses should figure out the secret to atomic energy, made the atom bomb, and the American government won the war. So if you ask people, how did the atom bomb work? How did the atom bomb work? Simple. There was the Second World War, and the Nazis were going to discover, so America spent a lot of money, so they made an atom bomb. That's the historical background, but that doesn't explain the formula. You have to have a formula to explain. The history is interesting. That's a, believe it or not, the history. Chikava, in Yiddish, you say chikava. It's fascinating, but that doesn't... Halacha has to have a formula. So he said, the Gemara says, Mishum Igun Akila Be Rabbanan. Because the rabbi saw there were a lot of agunas when the Romans were killing a lot of people. They were throwing people in dungeons. And they were lucky if an Eid Echad knew that the man was dead. They couldn't say you need to aid him. So they had to come up with a reason why Eid Echad should be Neman. You can't just say there was a Shas Hadchak and therefore they had to be Mekel. What's the formula? What right do you have to be Mekel? It's a Dovah should be every need to aid him. So the Gemara gives either one or the other. Either it's a Milsan David Ligler, Loim Shakri Inchi, because Isha Daikon Mitzvah. But they had to come up with a formula. Mishumer Gid Akil Rabban is just the historical background that motivated the rabbis to convene a conference to break their heads and to figure out the Heter. But after the history, then you have to have the Heter. He gave a mashal. He said it just before. There was a professor in the Jewish Theological Seminary, printed a book. He said the Tanoim came up with the Kulis in Hilchas Sukkah. And whenever there's a gap of less than 3 tefachim, you say lavud, and the tefachim don't have to reach all the way up. The tefachim only have to be 10 tefachim tall. That's below my waist, and the schach is going to be much higher, so people can walk. A 6-foot tall person can walk in the sukkah. So the schach doesn't have to touch the tefachim. Even though the tefachim don't reach the schach, you say good asik lechitzta. He visualizes if it reaches. So this professor wrote a whole book. Because there was a scarcity of wood in the days of the Tanaim, that's where they came up with these coolers. So people said he's an apikoros, because this is halacha moshe misin. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, he doesn't think that itself makes the guy an apikoros. Maybe that was the historical background. Maybe that was the Shas HaTchak, that the rabbis had to come up with some cooler, because there was a lack of wood. But then they had to come up with a formula. You can't just say there was a Shas HaTchak, therefore they say the sukkah is good. It's no good, it's no good. So the formula maybe was, these dinim maybe were originally only known in Hilchos Shabbos, from Mechitzas for Shabbos. And because of the Shas HaTchak, so they thought about it, and then they realized it doesn't only apply to Mechitzas for Shabbos, it applies to the Defanus of Sukkah as well. Halacha Moshe Messina and Shabbos can be carried over to Sukkah. Maybe that was what triggered off the whole discussion. Maybe there wasn't Shas HaTchak, but that doesn't explain the halacha. The historical background doesn't explain the halacha. Allah has to have a formula. And whenever the rabbis come up with such a din, even if there's a big Shas HaTchak, the din has to be rooted in some halacha or another. You can't just change the din. They're not changing any din.
The Rav spoke about Heter Mechira before. I think I heard in the name of the Rav that people shouldn't need Mahajim Shemit either because of what they're doing. Be'ed Echaredis is wiring money to the Palestinians.
That's a big problem. You're supporting the enemies of Eretz Yisrael. That is a big problem. Yeah, yeah.
What does Rebbe think about asking for oneself out of Shalos Tshuva Sfarim when the answer might have been given to a specific person in their situation?
A lot of people learn in the yeshiva, so they think that they're knowledgeable enough to pass on Shalos. Sometimes they are, very often they're not. Very often they're missing some major factor. Paskin and Shal, I got to know a lot of Gemaras. I remember when I was taking the Bechina for Yerideya, I wanted to test myself to see if I knew the material. So I opened up the Igris Moshe and I read the Shaila and I decided what the answer should be. Then I read the answer. No similarity living or dead to what I... Rav Moshe quoted a Dog and Mervova that's printed on the side of the page. I hadn't learned it. I didn't realize that. Then I remember another occasion, I was learning with my Chavrusa, Rabbi Mordechai Willig. We were learning, he was still single at that time. We were learning the Dinim and Yevamos, about Tzuadaka, Kushotcha. So we read the Pizchei Tshuva, the Pizchei Tshuva quotes a Tshuva by Abchaim Balajana. So we read the Tshuva, we thought we knew everything there was to know, and we decided we're going to test ourselves. So we opened up an Igros Moshe, and we read the Shaila, and we decided what the answer should be. And Moshe quotes in the Gemara B'choris we never heard of. Nothing to do with anything. And he shows how it's relevant to the din over here. The Pasuk and the Shaila, you got to know all over. You don't always... There are different aspects. Every Shaila has different aspects to it. Even if you study the whole sugya, there may be some other sugya that there's another issue. Just because you thought the din should be in Ebenezer, maybe the din is going to be in Aruch Chaim, because there's a different angle to the Shaila. And a lot of times, a tshuva that was written is slightly different circumstances. When you have a slight difference, a lot of times the din, the maskana is going to be different. A lot of the shailas that they have tshuvas on, if you live in a different generation, the whole tshuva doesn't apply, because all the circumstances are different. The laws of the Torah don't change, but the world keeps on changing. The world keeps on changing. It's a different shaila. It's a different shaila. You get it. Sometimes you get a different tshuva. You get a different psak. That's a big problem. Yeshiva Bachem. They're classmates together with the ones who are the rabbis, and then they think, I was a classmate with him. I did better than him on the Gemara exams. I can pass on shailas also. A lot of times you can't, even though you're brighter in high school or in college. You're smarter than him and learning. But he's been looking at Shulchan Aruch for the last couple of years. You haven't. That's a problem. How to pass on Shabbos is a tricky thing.
Is there a major difference between a velvet keeper and a kippah surah or something like that?
Is there a difference between a velvet? I have a friend of mine who's a big math professor, one of the world's biggest professors in math. So he was once at a wedding, and some of the people wearing this kind of yarmulke, that kind. So there was a goyish math professor there. He said, how come they're wearing this kind of a cap and the other? He started giving him a whole dissertation. Mm-hmm. So he said, this is a Zionistic, and this is this. The professor said he didn't need a whole dissertation. He thought there's an easy explanation. It's all the same thing. You're not mechayev to advertise in your yarmulke what the hashkafa you follow. It's all the same thing.
What are the Rosh Hashiva's thoughts on the Mechon HaMikdash and starting to build to create the healing for the Beit HaMikdash?
When the Mechon HaMikdash first began, 30 years ago,
They
learned by me. They were my time. In Kiryat Arba, there were two summers that I gave Sherman Kiryat. So some of my guys were the ones who started the Mechon HaMikdash. I thought they're preparing for the Beis HaMikdash. I thought that it's okay. So on one occasion, quite a few years ago, they brought a gigantic thing. I don't know how they brought it on the plane. They brought it to America. And they brought it to YU. Rav Soloveitchik wasn't there, but Baron Soloveitchik was there in YU at the time. So they wanted me to bring them into Baron Soloveitchik in the dormitories. So I brought them in. And they say they're preparing for the third base. I mean, this is this, and this is this. And I think there were two things. There one gigantic thing. And he listens and shines. And then they said, thank you, and they left. So after they left, he said, that's exactly what the Gemara says you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to make Kalim like in the basement. So I said, why don't you tell them? That's what they showed it to you. They wanted to. So I ran after them, and I told them. So Magic thinks that that's exactly what you're not allowed to do. But they said that they had Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael who told them that it's permissible because they're not making it for themselves. They think they're preparing it to be used in the next base on the Mikdash. That's what their Rabbanim told them.
What are Rebbe's thoughts in terms of Kohen learning for both secular classes and Talmud Torah?
The New York Board of Education, not Jewish Board of Education, the secular Board of Education, in New York they have a few separate schools for boys and for girls. Most of the schools are co-ed, and the colleges for sure are co-ed, but they have a few schools. So they came to a realization that it's better for both the boys and the girls to have separate classes. because a lot of times the girls will be embarrassed to show the boys that they're so smart. And the boys have to show off in the presence of the girls that they're so smart. So the both of them will be lacking in their success and studies. So they said it's better for secular education that they should have separate classes. And learning for sure, it's not really right. It's not really right because you have boys and girls together, let's say on a high school level. The girls already look feminine. Boys have a yetzer hara for a girl. I'm an old man. I have a yetzer hara. When I see a good-looking woman, I have a yetzer hara. That's normal. So it's going to lead to sin. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a co-ed high school. He had co-ed Maimonides. And then one of the rabbanim visited Rabbi Soloveitchik in the last years of his life, and he told him that they just started a co-ed high school in Toronto, and it's patterned after Maimonides. So he got upset. How is it patterned after Maimonides? He said, when I founded Maimonides, it was the only day school in all of New England. And he said, if I would have made it separate, I wouldn't stand the chance to have the school succeed. He said it was a miracle that it succeeded being co-ed. And he was on top of it. He would spend a lot of time. He came fluent in New York to give shiur in yeshiva, university, but he always went back to Maimonides. He was supervising it there. And then when he was older and he wasn't strong enough to supervise it, he encouraged them that they should raise money and separate the school. But he said in Toronto, they always had separate for boys and separate for girls. So what was they had to have together? He said it's a risky thing to have a mixed school. And the younger grades, there's no Yetzirah. Preschool, first grade, second grade, the first couple of grades, no Yetzirah. The boy doesn't know what a girl is, the girl doesn't know what a boy is. But when they start getting a little older, they realize that there's a Zohar and a Keva. Then they have the Yetzer Hara. So he said, it's not a smart thing. That's what I don't know personally, but this is what Dr. Twersky told me. I remember I was sitting at the Pidyon HaBen, when Rabbi Meir Twersky made a Pidyon HaBen for his son. So they had a fleishig meal, so I was there. It was in the New York area. Rabbi Soloveitchik was sitting to my left and Dr. Twersky to my right. Remember, Rabbi Soloveitchik was already old. He was falling apart. He couldn't cut the chicken. Kept on dropping the food, so I was cutting the chicken for him. So I remember Professor Twersky was the son-in-law of Rabbi Soloveitchik. So he said, do I have a good boy in the kollel who can teach Gemara in Maimonides? They need a new Rebbe. So I said, you're not going to get a good boy because it's co-ed. Whoever's going to come is going to be very weak in learning, because a strong learner is not going to want to come. So he said, tell them in my name that they plan to separate the classes. The Rabbi Soloveitchik said, I misunderstood my father-in-law. He said, after Mrs. Soloveitchik passed away, Rabbi Soloveitchik moved into his home, and they lived together. So he thought he knew his father-in-law well. He says he just found out now that his idea of having a co-ed school was only a shas ha-tchakir yevedami. He didn't mean it l'chatchila. And he asked the Balabatim to raise money to separate the classes between the boys and the girls. So I should send a good Ben Talmud Chacham that he should teach Gemara there, and on the understanding that they plan to separate the classes. So I sent a big Talmud Chacham, what's his name? Rabbi Goldman, I think his name is. A big Talmud Chacham. They never separated the classes. So he teaches in the school. This big Talmud Chacham teaches in the school. And his children he didn't send, his sons he didn't send to Maimonides. He sent them to some of the Babichev school, which is separate, and they never separated it, but it's not really right. I visited in Maimonides twice after Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away for different purposes. There's no similarity, living or dead, to what the school used to be during his lifetime. During his lifetime, they had teachers. They taught Chumash with the whole Torah Shabbat Peh. They had to know the whole Seder Avodah on Yom Kippurim step by step. Not at all the same now. Not at all the same. Not the way he set it up. It's not the school that he set up at all. Not a smart idea to have a co-ed. Look, Ramaz, in certain schools you have to have co-ed because the alternative is going to be the parents are going to send the kids to a public school, a Goyish school. So it's better to have a co-ed Jewish school. They should marry a Jewish girl. Well, why should they marry a non-Jewish girl? So you have to have a school like that. But if the alternative is to send them to a school where they're separate for boys and separate for girls, that certainly that was a Jewish tradition all along. And that's what the New York Board of Education, the secular Board of Education, came to the realization it's better for the secular studies also that they should have separate courses, not only for religious observance.
And are activities done in co-ed environments of youth groups, such as the Entzvah Shabbos Shabbos Hadim or the Akiva, only permissible and in Shas?
You got no choice. When I was a little boy, we lived in Philadelphia. My father was a rabbi. And the only club for the Jewish children was the Shama Hadati, which later became B'nai Akiva. I used to walk, I think, 40 minutes every Shabbos. And that's because in our neighborhood, there were no religious children my age. So I used to walk. That's where we got together. And it was co-ed. I was very young. I was way before Bar Mitzvah at that time. In fact, the first time I met Mrs. Levinger from Chevron, what's her name? I forgot her name. So she recognized me from the Ken Mizracha, from the East Bronx. I used to go to B'nai Akiva in Philadelphia. Shamadat became B'nai Akiva. Then when my parents sent me to New York, I stayed with my grandparents to go to Yeshiva Ketana. Is to go to the B'nai Akiva Ken in Mizracha in the Eastern Bronx. And then she was older than me, so she recognized me. I don't remember her. She recognized me from there. But for older people, I don't know, did they have, how old are they? They talk B'nai Akiva. When I became Bar Mitzvah, my parents had already moved to New York. When I became Bar Mitzvah, I realized that I never learned Chumash and Rashi and Rabbi Sedrin. So after my Bar Mitzvah, a year after my Bar Mitzvah, I stopped going to B'nai Akiva, and I started learning Chumash and Rashi. I had no time to socialize in B'nai Akiva. So for me, before Bar Mitzvah, I don't know if I knew the difference between a boy and a girl. So it was good for me. But for all the kids, I don't know how smart it is. I don't know.
What does the Rebbe say about kids in yeshiva dressing up on Purim after the Megillah?
That was the minig in Europe. The Ramah writes that minig. But it shouldn't consume the whole day. Purim is supposed to be a serious holiday. It's like Kabbalah Satorah. The Gemara says Shavuos is different from Pesach and Sukkot because we're celebrating Kabbalah Satorah. So even though there is a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, how you're supposed to celebrate the Pesach and Sukkot, whether you have to have elaborate meals or not, but Hakol Moed and Batzeres, all the Tanaim agree Shavuos, Yom Shenit Matar, you have to have elaborate meals. And the Girsas HaGa'onim in the Gemara is that the same is true regarding Purim. Purim is Kim of the Kiblu. Kiblu, there was another Kabbalah Satorah. Beratzin, there was another Kabbalah Satorah. So you do a little shtick, you dress up a little bit, but you have to celebrate in a serious fashion. It's a Yom Kabbalah Satorah. It has to be a little bit. It has become the Jewish Halloween. So that's scandalous. It's not supposed to be the Jewish Halloween. You dress up a little bit of shtick, but not the whole day. People get drunk. There's no mitzvah to get drunk all day. The Brisker Rav, Rav Avala Soloveitchik, pointed out that you look in the Rambam, Hilchos Megillah, the mitzvah to drink is in the middle of the meal. If you get drunk not in the middle of the meal, there's no mitzvah. Mitzvah is, the meal should be consist of basa v'yayin, and the yayin should be ad lo yada. So the Rambam says the tradition is ad lo yada. You take a nap. After the benching, you take a nap. Shouldn't be to walk around and throw up and sit in all the dirt. I remember we had one of my sons was learning in Baltimore in high school, so he brought for Purim. Once on Purim, one of the boys from high school was driving home by car, and he was so drunk, he got killed. He got in an accident. So since then, the yeshiva is closed on Purim. They don't want to be responsible. So they discouraged the boys that shouldn't drink because one of the boys got killed. So my son, one of my sons was learning in Baltimore in high school, so he brought back a friend who was from Switzerland. So the friend got drunk, and he could hardly breathe. So we had to take him to the hospital. They weren't going to treat him because he wasn't an American citizen, so they had to call up the embassy or something. In the middle of the night on Purim, Mamish, it was a sakonis nefashis. Drinking is a terrible thing. There's no mitzvah to drink Leil Purim. The mitzvah is only Bayom. Mar says, Suras Purim, Shasa, Babai, Lalayatsu Dechalas. You have to have an elegant Suda Bayom. It should be Basa Vayayin. Should be more Yishta Yosemi Regiluso, more than he usually drinks, till it makes him a little drowsy, and then you take a nap after the benching. more correct is you should really bench before the shkia. A lot of people have the practice, they wash for the sudas purim late in the afternoon, and the bulk of the suda they eat balayla. So I'm sure enough, that's not right. The bulk of the suda should be eaten by yom. But there's still a machloikis. If you ate the meal by yom and you don't bench until layla, do you say ala nisim or not? So we pask, and you do say ala nisim. But more correct is you don't get involved in the machloikis. I'll tell over this story. I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik Gobes used to go on vacation. He had a summer home in Cape Cod, on the Cape, in Onset in Massachusetts. So he didn't like it there, but his wife wanted it. He didn't like it because there wasn't always a minyan. On Shabbos there was always a minyan, and weekdays, most of the time there was a minyan for Shacharis, Mincha Maariv, there was no minyan because the people went to work. They had to drive to Boston. Then the morning also, you had to daven quickly because the people had to get to work, they had to drive to work. So he didn't like going there, but as long as his wife was alive, she wanted a vacation, so he went. As soon as she died, he stopped going. So I remember one year, one summer, Rabbi Michal Shurkin, who teaches in a different yeshiva here, he was a distant relative of Rabbi Soloveitchik, so he insisted that Rabbi Soloveitchik, he's going to come that summer, and he schlepped me along. That was the summer that his father passed away. So then he went home for his father's funeral, and I was left there all by myself, so I only went because of Michal. So then after 2 days later, I left also. So. I remember it was Rosh Chodesh. There was a minyan for Mincha Maariv. So we daven Mincha, and the Meiselmans invited us to eat by them, Rabbi Meiselman's parents. So we daven Mincha, and then we watched until it's done. We sat down to eat. Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother was alive at that time. She was benching. And then when she finishes benching, she turns to us and she says in Yiddish, the boys learn in the yeshiva all their lives and they don't know it's a machlikas. If you ate on Rosh Chodesh and you bench on Mitzoy Rosh Chodesh, but you say Yalaviyava, you don't do what you did. Either you bench before the shkia like I did, or you wash after Tzeis HaKocham. You don't get yourself involved in a machlikas of Hashem. So ever since she gave us the Musar, I try to observe that. Some Purim will always bench before the shkia. And Shalosh Shudas also, when I have Shalosh Shudas at home, I always bench before the Shkia. When you have in the yeshiva, so that's the way they set it up. They start eating Shalosh Shudas before the Shkia, then they have a drosha, and then you bench after the Shkia. So when I eat in the yeshiva, so I go along with them, but I usually avoid it when I'm on my own. That was one of the hallmarks of the brisker style, that they would try to be choshish for all the different opinions, like the Mishnah Berurah often has like that. He recommends you should try to be choshish for all the different opinions. Do the mitzvahs in such a way that you satisfy as many opinions as possible. So more correct is not to get involved in that machlokes, to bench before the shki. Yeah. Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother was a personality. Yeah. When she got married, Rabbi Soloveitchik told over this story, when she got married, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik had a hang-up about fasting Taneisim. His children didn't fast, only Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. I'm not sure if they fasted Tisha B'Av either. Yom Kippur they fasted. I don't know about Tisha. He said, everybody's a Chodesh Eim Sakana today, and everybody should eat, and all the Taneisim. So he had this, he's very nervous about fasting. Rav Soloveitchik was brought up by his other grandfather, his mother's father. His mother's father fasted all the Taneisim. So he used to fast on the Yahrzeit, he fasted all the Taneisim. But his cousins here in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't fast any other fast days. They would eat on all the Taneisim, except for Yom Kippur. Yeah. So he told over the story that Rav Chaim came to the wedding when his parents got married, and he sent a message to the Kala, she should eat. She shouldn't fast on the day of the wedding. Usually the Chasen Kala fast. So his mother was a spunky girl, so she said, my father's the rabbi in this city, my father paskim that I should fast. I'm not interested what my future father-in-law has to say, my father's the rabbi. But Chaim liked that. She was a spunky girl, and she gave him the answer, my father's the rabbi. So he liked her more than the other daughters. She knew a lot of halacha also. I remember when she passed away, so Baron Soloveitchik delivered a hesped. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't deliver a hesped when his mother died because his wife was holding by dying. His wife, in the same period of time, his mother died, then the brother died soon after the mother, and then his wife died soon after. So he didn't deliver a hesped when his mother died. He was falling to pieces over the fact that his wife was on a deathbed in the hospital in Boston. But Rabban Soloveitchik delivered a hesped. So he told over an interesting story that once a kohen came to his father with a shot of tumas kohanim, that he lived in an apartment building, probably in America, I don't know, in America and Europe, it sounded like it was America. And he described the whole apartment building. There was someone had died in the building, so it was a shot of tumas ohel. He allowed to walk in his hallway to get to his apartment, since there's a mace somewhere else in the building. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik didn't know the din, but his mother was listening in the kitchen. His mother knew Mishnayis as well. So she took the Mishnayis aholos, and she turned to the right page. She tiptoed into the dining room, where her husband was talking with the kohen, with the balabas, Abishayla. She pointed to the Mishnah, and she tiptoed out. He said, my mother wouldn't say the din. In front of my father, mother wouldn't say the din. But she showed her, she knew Mishnayis better than her father. Better than his father. So she showed him where the Mishnah was, and she tiptoed out. His mother knew a lot. Sometimes Rabbi Soloveitchik would be mekel on something. He would used to sometimes stay by his mother when his mother lived in the neighborhood. So when he slept over, he used to stay by his mother. So sometimes people would ask him shalas, and he would say what the din is. So the mother would interject. She would say, "Your father would never paskin like that." So he said, "Back that. I'm not going to be mekel." Mother said, "Your father would never be mekel on that." He backed up. Mother was a very learned woman.
Does Rosh Yeshiva please identify some, I guess, things that the communities that we come from need to work on most, and some issues on how to fix them?
Davening is a disaster. The people daven so quickly. We live in Chutzlag, we don't speak Hebrew all the time. So we daven in Hebrew, we don't know what we're talking. You have to daven slowly. The davening is three times as long as it was in the days of the Tanaim. They never said so much. He said, Karbanis, and Sukkot Zimra, and everything before and after. It's so long. It's so long. How can you say so much in so little time? I can't daven so much. I don't say the whole Behurachim. I made up my mind, the Chidor quotes that the Behurachim was composed by three different Talmid Chachamim. And the first third ends at Kikel Melchan Rachmat, and the second third ends Kikel Melchan Rachmat. So I can't say the whole thing. So I make up my mind, on Monday I'll say the first third. If I still have time, I'll say a little more. I never have a chance to say two thirds. Then on Thursday I'll start from the second, where I left off on Monday, from the second third. Then next Monday I'll say the third third. If I have more time, the third third is shorter than the others. I'll start from the first one. I can't say the whole Pesuk of the Zimra. A lot of times, even Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I can't say the whole Pesuk of the Zimra. Even though they daven slowly in Shiva, I can't say so fast. I hear sometimes the people, the Shliach Tzibur, daven Svaranam, but they leave out every other syllable. They leave out, that's how they daven so quickly. They leave out every other syllable. No, the Medrash says HaKadosh Baruch accepts the prayers, even though they're Igloy Alay Ahava, they're Lugoy Ahava, even though they're skipping syllables. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the prayers, but you're not supposed to skip syllables. So say less. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, "Tol mi'at bekavana me'ar b'shaloi bekavana." It's better to say less, and to try to know what you're talking about than to say so much. The davening has to be taken care of. The Baba Tanya has, in the end of the Tanya, has a collection of letters, Igros HaKodesh they call it. So he has one letter. He insists that the Lubavitcher, his Chassidim, his followers, should daven Shacharis an hour and a half every day. If they have to go to work, so they go to work in the middle. So you should put up a guy who doesn't go to work. The Shliach Tzibur should be a son-in-law who is being supported to sit and learn. He doesn't have to run to work. He should daven slowly every day, an hour and a half. And whoever has to go to work should leave early. They shouldn't kill the whole davening. And then he says, and I'm going to check, I'm going to send spies to all the Chassidish communities to find out if they're listening to me. And if they're not listening, if they're not davening an hour and a half shacharis, when they come to visit me on Yom Tov, I won't give them shalom. I won't greet them. Lubavitch now, some of the fastest davening is by Lubavitch. They don't follow at all. An hour and a half for shacharis. They don't do it. Davening has to be improved. It's terrible. What else? A lot of things have to improve. The authority of the Rabbanim has been undermined. People don't ask shailas. A lot of people don't ask shailas. And people think they can pass on their own. There's so many books in English, so many books in Hebrew and English, they think they can pass Kana. So some people can pass Kana, but many cannot. If you don't know all of Shas, there may be another issue involved in the case. How do you know? You think the answer is going to be in this siman of Shulchan Aruch. The answer may be in a different siman of Shulchan Aruch. You may not even realize what the shaila is. Your answer isn't always in the siman that you think it's going to be. Cases are sometimes more complicated than one thinks. I don't know, we've got to work on everything. Got to try to improve everything. I don't know.
What tips can Rabbi give to combat laziness?
I don't know, that you have to be trained from a young age. Your parents have to train you to be industrious, not to waste time. I don't know, what do you do when you're older already? Used to being lazy? I don't know. The Mishnah says you only be matzlich in learning. It's adam ki yomus ba'oil. Only memes atzmo ba'olo shoter. Person has to strain himself a little bit. Doesn't mean you have to get sick. I used to, my mother-in-law, the first couple of years that I was married, my mother-in-law used to cook gefilte fish. She used to give it to my father. My father was a Rebbe in Torah V'das. There was a boy who lived in my neighborhood. We live in Washington Heights. My mother-in-law lived in Flatbush. So there was a boy in our neighborhood who learned in Torah V'das. Every Friday for a couple of years, he would bring the gefilte fish to me. So if it was the springtime where the Fridays are long, so the payoff would be, I would talk to him learning for 2 hours before Shabbos. And if it would be the winter when the Fridays are short, so he would deliver the gefilte fish. Then we come on Matzoy Shabbos to talk and learning. So this Bacher lived in a neighborhood, very nice family, very nice boy. And then he decided he graduated Torah V'das, he's going to go learn in Lakewood. Lakewood, they have a lot of people learning. Now they have over 5,000 people learning. But then it wasn't so crowded, so it was a big crowd. He wanted to be the top boy in Lakewood. So he would be the first one there and the last one out, and he would skip sometimes lunch, and he would strain himself till he had a nervous breakdown. He got sick. So his older brother had to go pick him up. He couldn't function. And his brother used to take him for walks in the street. This is the boy who talked to me learning every single week when he delivered the gefilte fish. His mother would walk with him in the street arm in arm. I would say, Shalom Aleichem. He wouldn't recognize me. He was mamish out of it for quite a while, out of it for quite a while. He couldn't function for quite a while. Then he needed a shidduch. Came back to him, needed a shidduch. He couldn't get a shidduch in America. Who wants to marry a guy had a nervous breakdown? So he moved to Eretz Yisrael. The whole past history was forgotten. He got a shidduch. He's the head of a kollel here. He already married off all of his children. Everything is straight now. But he had years that he was. You're not supposed to. He took the Gemara literally. You're not supposed to make yourself sick on learning. You don't waste time. You try to use every minute, but not to cut short the meals and to skip every other meal. It's ridiculous. There's no mitzvah to get sick over learning. You have to exercise a little bit to keep healthy. I don't know. How do you combat laziness? You have to break your midah. Breaking a midah is very difficult. Midah of laziness, got to break it. Shouldn't waste time, yeah.
I guess on a similar note, how much should a person push himself to learn late, even if he's going to be tired the next day?
It doesn't make sense. Going to be tired next day, going to kill a whole day. So what did you gain? And Valojin, the author of the Torah Tamima, was a nephew of the Netziv. First he was a nephew, and then he was a brother-in-law. The Netziv's first wife passed away, and then he married the sister of the Torah Tamima. So whenever the Torah Tamima quotes the Netziv, he says, Dodi Gisi, my uncle, my brother-in-law. First he was his uncle. Zorach HaShulchan was the father of the Torah Tamima. Mrs. Zorach HaShulchan was a Berlin. He was the sister of the Netziv. So he says, the yeshiva of Elohim was set up that whoever learns in the daytime has to sleep at night, whoever learns at nighttime has to sleep in the daytime. They insisted everybody has to have a good night's sleep or a good day's sleep. Everybody has to sleep. They were opposed to the shtick that they stay up all night. They were very opposed to that. Everybody has to sleep. So he used to say, as a vertel, it's not true, there is a machloikas hatanoim, but the kol yisod b'nei melochim banat. It's negeh to hilcha Shabbos, and again the end of Bo Metzia, lav kamina la alocha. So the Mishnah says in the first parak in Brachas that you can recite Kriyashma till Gimel Shoaz Bayom, till the end of 3 hours, because that's when B'nai Malachim wake up. But we don't pass and call this all B'nai Malachim. So the answer is, as long as there's a group of people who wake up at that time, it's still called Bikum Mecha, there are people getting up. So the Vertle saying Yiddish is, when it comes to sleep, we pass and call this all B'nai Malachim. I think the Torah Tamimah quotes that in his autobiography. He says, in Balashan they insist that everybody has to sleep well. And he used to say, with respect to sleeping, we do pass and call this all B'nai Malachim. You don't sleep well, you see, your whole day is going to be ruined. So what do you gain? Yeah.
To what extent is the YU modern Orthodox ideology suited to every single person?
The ideology? I don't know if YU has an ideology.
Modern Orthodox.
Dr. Belkin is the one who developed the whole thing. He made it a university. So he was not a good public speaker. So he said, I'll give you a cafeteria, a dormitory, a yeshiva, a college all in one building. That's the whole ideology. Instead of traveling to City College and going home to eat, they give you everything in one building. You have a dormitory, one campus. You have a cafeteria, you have a dormitory to sleep, you have a shiva, then you do with it whatever you want to do. Each person has his own ideology. I don't think any two people have the same ideology.
The idea of being a Talmud Chacham whilst not completely isolating yourself from the world.
Okay. That's the whole school has that ideology. You don't isolate yourself from the world. That's obvious. Yeah.
Can everyone do that? Or I've had some people say it's more suited to people more with better minds or...
The Netziv has a collection of tshuvas that's called Meshiv Dover. So they were writing in the newspapers about this topic, so they asked him to write an essay. Is there a right-wing orthodoxy, left-wing orthodoxy, centrist orthodoxy? What does he say? So he says, yes, there is, but it doesn't mean the left-wing doesn't keep any mitzvahs. They don't keep mitzvahs, so that's not Judaism. He says, we're talking everybody keeps all the mitzvahs. Right-wing means that they isolate themselves, they don't mix in with the whole world. They sit and learn about it, Hashem, they have nothing to do with the whole world. Left-wing Orthodox means they're open to the whole world. And centrist Orthodox say they're open a little bit. That's the whole difference. So why you? It's understood that they're open to the outside world. What are you studying secular studies about? But what you do with it later on, each person makes his own cheshbon. It's what he does for a living. No two people are the same. Dr. Belkin used to have a lotion about synthesis. You blend together the Limudi Kodesh with the Limudi Chol. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't like it. There's no synthesis. When you study in the college is separate, the Torah should guide your life. He didn't like that lotion synthesis. But he went to university also. He used to encourage all the boys to go to university. He thought that to be an Adam HaShomayim, you have to go to university. That's Rabbi Hirsch thought like that. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch thought like that. So Rabbi Schwab used to be the rabbi in Breuer's community in Washington. That's where I live. Rabbi Schwab learned in Tells. There were some Yekis who went to Eastern Europe to learn. He was one of them. So he was the one who sent a letter to all the different rabbanim. He sent a letter to Rabbi Baruch Ber, and to Rabbi Chana Wasserman, and to Chassidish Rebbes, and to Snaglish Rashi Yeshiva, sent to Rav Kook, then to many Rabbanim. Should he follow the family tradition, go to university like everybody else? But a lot of them are not so learning and not so observant. Or should he do like in the yeshivas? He should only dedicate his life to learning, not to go to university. So the different Rabbanim gave different answers. So Rav Baruch Ber and Rav Chanan, they have Tshuva the Shul in Medina Yedua. The Shul was Rabbi Schwab, and the Medina Yedua is Germany. He lived in Germany at the time. So they said, Rabbi Hirsch only meant it as a Haruah Shor. He didn't mean it with Doris, and you shouldn't follow the meaning of your parents. You should, like in the yeshivas, you sit and learn and don't go to university. Nor the Chassidish Rebbes gave him the other answer. He said, Rabbi Hirsch was successful, and he had his balabatim maintain religious observance. So if it works, it works. So you should do the same. Follow in the footsteps of your parents. His father was a balabas by Rabbi Hirsch. said, follow in the footsteps of your parents. So then later in life, Rabbi Schwab put out a book, Elu V'Elu, in English, These and Those. Elu V'Elu Divin Kimchaim. Those who go to the university, those who don't go to the university, they're both acceptable. That was his book, Elu V'Elu. But Dr. Belkin was the one who developed Yeshiva College to make it Yeshiva University. All he said, well, he spoke about synthesis, but all I don't think even in his mind it did mean synthesis. It just meant, we give you a cafeteria, with a dormitory, with a college, with a yeshiva, all together, that's all. Torah Vadas was originally going to have a college, that's why it's called, YU's motto is Torah Umadr. Umadr means secular studies. Torah Vadas was going to be the same thing, we're going to have a college. And they printed stationery, and they had the dean of the... And then Mr. Mendelovich was an Ungarish, so he corresponded with the Minchas Aluza, I think. And Minchas Aluza said, you don't have a college. So that was the end. So they didn't have a college, but they maintained the name, Torah Vadas. So Rav Baruch Ber used to correspond with, I think, that Shlomo Hyman was a Talmud of his, if I'm not mistaken. So he didn't want to say the name of the yeshiva Torah Vadas. He said, yeshiva mit the nishkin shein anomen. Yeshiva that has a not nice name, Torah Vadas. He held that the name was Trek. Torah Vadas means there's something more than Torah, that secular studies counts. Even though they canceled the whole plan to have a college, but they maintained the name Torah Vadas. Now it's already forgotten, no one knows that Torah Vadas means the same as Torah Mada. They plan to have a college. One of the, there was a family in Boston who were related distantly to the Chazon Ish. So whenever they had a major shaila, they were modern people. Whenever they had a major shaila, what direction to go, so they would send a message somehow to the Chazon Ish in Eretz Yisrael, and he would guide them. So their son had to decide whether he's going to go to Yeshiva College or to Torah Vadas. So they sent the shaila to the Chazon Ish. So they said that one of the Greinemans was going to come to America. They should meet him at the dock when he comes to America. He's going to give the answer. Such Sisri Torah, he's going to give the answer what he should do. So he said, so the answer of the Chazon Ish was, it was known as Revels Yeshiva. Yeshiva College, Dr. Revel was the president. So he said he should go to Revels Yeshiva and he'll learn a Parnasa, because you go to Torah Vadas, you're not going to get a college degree. There was no college. He felt you need a Parnasa. He should go to Revels Yeshiva, get a Parnasa, but he should be careful when the winds are blowing outside and it's cold, you have to put on a warm coat. So he means that while you, the winds are blowing, Yeshiva College, the winds are blowing because they have secular studies there, make sure you put on a fur coat. Make sure you don't fall in. So the fellow went to Yeshiva College and he became a nice religious balabas.
We'll take one or two final questions.
Would the Rebbe say there's any heter to go on vacation to a place for like a week or 5 days, but you know it's not going to be in your home?
It's not right. Especially for Shabbos, the Beis Yosef quotes the Ramban al HaTorah, Beis Yosef and Hilchus Pesach, Tfilos Yontem, quotes the Ramban al HaTorah, that Mikra Kodesh means a day of holy assemblage. Mikra like Kruy Hoedah, those who gather together. So Mikra Kodesh means a day of holy assemblage, that we gather together to have Tfilah B'Tzibur and Talmud Torah B'Tzibur, and Shabbos and Yontem. The Ramban holds that Tfilah B'Chol Yom is only the Rabbanon. This morning we said the Rama. The Rama holds that tefillah the Raisa once a day, every day is the Raisa. Ramban holds that tefillah b'chol yom is only the Rabbanon, only the Eis Tzora. But tefillah b'tzibur is the Raisa on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Tefillah b'tzibur and Talmud Torah b'tzibur. So for Shabbos and Yom Tov, for sure it's not right. But even on the weekdays, the Gemara says that you stand there much. Why do you daven? Because you want the Kodesh Baruch Hu to answer your prayers, and not just to talk, to mumble a whole bunch of words. You want the Baruch Hu to answer your prayers. You need a shidduch, you need a parnasa, you need good health, you need children, we need a lot of things. We need Geula, Yeshua, we need Mashiach, we need a lot of things. So the Gemara says you stand a better chance of having your prayers answered if you daven mitzibur than if you daven b'yichidus. The Gemara gives a mashal. If you buy a whole bushel of apples and some of them are rotten, so you can't say, I want my money back on the two rotten apples. It's understood. You buy a whole bushel of apples, some of them are going to be rotten apples. But if you buy one apple and it's rotten, then you say you want your money back. That's not a good apple. So if a guy davens on his own and he doesn't daven so well, he's the rotten apple. So they're not going to accept his tefillos. But if he davens together with the tzibur, so one rotten apple among the tzibur will be accepted. A bunch of them have to accept the prayers. So you stand, the whole purpose of davening is that the prayer should be answered. So we have a tradition, we stand a better chance. And of course, Bochum boys put tefillos arabim. So if you stand a better chance of having the prayers answered, if you dab mitzvah, so you should dab mitzvah. Sechel dictates. It's not right. You can find a good place with tefillos mitzvah. You can get everything.
Last question. Who
we solved all the world's problems. No more questions. No?
One last question. Right there in the question.
In recent years, there have been many different interpretations of what the Rav has said in terms of different stocks. Does the Rosh Hashiva feel that this may split modern orthodoxy as it has?
It has split. Part of my job in Yeshiva, I used to mark the Bechinas. I used to grade the students for Rabbi Soloveitchik's class. Some of them got hundreds. I wasn't cheap. When Aaron Lichtenstein used to mark, hardly anybody got 100. When he gave me 100, the older guys came, they wished me mazel tov, I got 100. But I'm not so cheap, it's not my money. So when I marked the Bechinas, a lot of guys got 100, we never knew. But one of the guys got an 8 out of 100. And he's one of the big spokesmen. He's telling me what Rabbi Soloveitchik said. Come on. Someone got 50s, 60s. But what they did, if you didn't understand the halacha, then you didn't understand the hashkafa either. The hashkafa was all using halachic terminology. The hashkafa was always using melitzas from the Gemara. The people didn't understand Rabbi Soloveitchik's jokes. They didn't understand the Sichas Chulin. One of the books that Rabbi Soloveitchik has the copyright, a collection of his drushes, so he handpicked the one who's going to translate from the Yiddish drushes into the Hebrew. He handpicked the guy he knew him from Europe from years before. So he has there a joke that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say every 2 years, he used to say this joke in public. The guy didn't get the joke. It's the guy who's translating. So he has, Rabbi Soloveitchik used to be a Jewish philosopher, Shaddal, Shmuel David Litzato, in Italy. He's basically an Orthodox philosopher. His descendants, Litzato, they still live in Italy now. So Shaddal lived the beginning of the Reform Movement. So he said that first the Reform Movement decided that nobody understands Aramaic, so what do you gain by saying Yupurkan, two different Yukumpurkans? So they left out, I think, the second Yukumpurkan. They left out one of the Yukumpurkans. Then, perhaps 2-3 years later, they had a convention, and they decided they're going to leave out all the Yukumpurkans. No one understands it anymore. And then they changed the whole davening into German, everything. Then everything got worse and worse, and the whole Reform movement. So he said, I think they call it in English the salami technique. You slice, you slice, you keep on slicing up a little bit until there's no more salami left. That's called the salami technique or some such an expression. So he said, the Pasuk says in Chumash, Vayimachas kol hayikum. First they took off one Yukumpurkan, and then they decided to wipe off all the Yukumpurkan. They're going to wipe off the whole religion. Once you start chiseling away the whole thing. So the guy didn't understand what the pun was, the one who translated. So he writes in the Hebrew book, Arayamazetz, in the Hebrew translation of Rav Soloveitchik's drushes, Osam ben yodam shemachku min asidur es hayikum purkan, holchu umachku min achumish es hapasik bayimachas kol hayikum. So what's the pun? So what's the joke? He didn't get the joke. Rav Soloveitchik, they didn't understand his sichas chulin. You know how to, the Gemara says, sichas chulin shal talmid chacham tzorach talmud. You have to be learned to understand why Rav Soloveitchik said the joke. Rav Soloveitchik had his own style of, he was a big kibitzer, had a very good sense of humor. So if you would tell him, I don't get along with my mother-in-law, I'm considering killing her, he would say, I wouldn't recommend it. So, Rav Soloveitchik didn't say it's us, he just said it wouldn't recommend it. So right, that is Mikra Adin, it's Mutter, just as right. That was his way of expressing himself, he wouldn't recommend it.
And does the Rosh Hashiva have a vision of how the Rav historically considered and not misconstrued?
How what?
How the do you have does the Rosh Hashiva have a vision or an idea of how the Rav story can be preserved in the right way?
I don't understand the family why they don't publish everything that he said. Originally they didn't want people to print the Divrei Torah, the Shiurim. So then people went and printed it without permission, and they did a miserable job. And now, a lot of what's available is miserable. They're taking everything and forcing it into a straitjacket. Everything is gavra, heftze, malos, kiyam. That's little children. That's pseudo-brisk. Everything has to be gavra, heftze. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't talk like that. That wasn't his style. He said every person has his own style of expression. He had his own way of expressing, of saying the shia. He didn't squeeze everything gavra, heftze. I think they're killing his Torah. Some of the books that they came out on halacha, they just have inaccuracies. They're just not correct. I remember around 10 years ago, they invited me to speak at to participate in the rabbinical conference at Johannesburg. What happened was that there was a rabbi there. I was involved in a Din Torah in Australia. I didn't go to Australia, but I was on the telephone. I was one of the dayanim on the telephone. And one of the dayanim who was there was Rabbi Moshe Kurtztag. He used to be like 7 feet tall, a big husky guy. He was in Israel. He was in Johannesburg for many years. I think he retired now. He moved back there to Israel. So he invited me 3 years in a row. So he liked the way the Din Torah came out. So I never met him. At that time, I hadn't met him. Since then, I did meet him. He invited me to come to the rabbinical conference that they're going to have. So I answered the phone 3 years in a row, and I said, I have no time. The fourth year, my wife answered the phone. So she said, sure, we'll come. We'll be happy to come. So we went, so they... I really forgot what was I talking about.
So open the orthodoxy and the Rav's Torah being preserved. And misquoting the Rav's halacha.
I really forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So I stayed by Valabas, who since then moved to Eretz Yisrael. So he wanted to show me. A wealthy Balabas is a very nice man. He wanted to show me that he's up on everything that's going on in YU. So the first night that I come to go to sleep there, so he shows me, here are the latest 2 books from Rabbi Soloveitchik's Torah, and he gives me. He bought Rabbi Soloveitchik, someone transcribed Rabbi Soloveitchik's talks that he gave on Tisha B'Av. So he goes and he gives me the book. I had never seen it. I think it's a transcription of the lectures that he had, the shurim that he gave. So I start reading it. I only read 5 pages. There were 2 major mistakes in the first 5 pages. Idiots. They couldn't show it to a Talmid Chacham before they print their Absalvech. He already passed away. This was around 10 and 11 years ago. Should have shown it to a Talmid Chacham. They printed it in his name. Maybe he said it, but he made a mistake. It's against Allah. If you would ask him, Mashallah, Allah Lamaisa, he wouldn't paskin the way it says in the book. But they went and they printed it. Then there was a mistake in Lumdis that he... So whoever transcribed it didn't get it straight. It wasn't so difficult to understand. It wasn't, he was very clear, but you had to be prepared to be able to understand what he's talking about. I was in the shir at the age of 16 till 26. I think I had the best 10 years of his life. Before my time, he had very brilliant students. Dr. Lamb is very brilliant. Saul Roth, very brilliant. Classmates and Jake Rabinowitz, a lot of brilliant people. Rabbi Soloveitchik at that time gave shurim on such a high level, I don't know if the students really understood the shurim that he was saying. By the time I came to the shir, he already lowered the level so people could understand. And he said so much, he spoke so quickly, he used to speak in Yiddish. In the early years, he switched to English when he realized there was one student who didn't understand Yiddish. There was one student in the class who davened in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. He never heard a word of Yiddish. So when he taught, the next day the shir was in English. But until then, he didn't realize that there were people who don't know Yiddish. He thought everybody spoke Yiddish. He explained himself very well, but if a person wasn't prepared, you're not familiar with the Lashon HaGemara, so you didn't know what in the world he was talking about. There were quite a few people who got 100. Quite a few people can write over the shurim very well. But unfortunately, the people who are printing the shurim now, several of them were never in the shir, and they're just printing over things. Some of them are just inaccurate. Some outright mistakes in halacha. Rabbi Soloveitchik never said it. And some of them, even if it is accurate, but it's not Rabbi Soloveitchik's style, it's not his signum. They're putting his Torah into a straitjacket. It has to fit in. Everything has to be gavren hechefzi. You have to schmaltz it up and put everything in yeshivisha language. He didn't speak yeshivisha language. He spoke his own Hebrew. He spoke his own style of halacha. That was one of his hallmarks. In Torah Shebaal Peh, there is no particular text. Torah Shebichsav, there's a text, Molei Chosa, you have to write it the way it says, Moshe Rabbeinu, in the Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh, there is no text. Each person expresses himself with his own Lashonus. He had his own terminology. Very unfortunate, he's being misrepresented. What can you do? History. Remember, I once visited Rabbi Rudiman for Baltimore. I was at an OU convention, and at my table there was a mishulach for the Baltimore yeshiva. So he kept on encouraging me on the way back to New York, I should stop off in Baltimore. So we stopped off, and I stopped off with my wife in Baltimore, and we visited Rabbi Rudiman. So he was talking to me. He said, he was telling me that history sometimes cheats certain individuals. He said, Rabbi Soloveitchik has been cheated. He deserves so much more to be accepted. His Torah was so fantastic. He made everything easy. That's the most difficult thing that made it easy. And he was cheated by history. One of the Rabbanim, after Rabbi Soloveitchik passed away, one of the Rabbanim, I think it's from Memphis, Tennessee, Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt. He used to be Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. This is Rabbi Ephraim's uncle, Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt, is still alive. So he wrote a little bit Divrei Hesped. So he writes, when he was a teenager learning in Chafetz Chaim in New York, so Rabbi Soloveitchik was going to start a kollel, 1938 or 1939, something like that. And a kollel for single guys, nobody was married. He was going to give shiur. And they told him Rabbi Soloveitchik is an Eloi, so he didn't know what it means. So he was traveling by bus to Boston to join. I think he was the youngest one in the group. He was a teenager, the others were a little older than him. So he's traveling, didn't know what to expect, what's an Eloi. So it was Chodesh Elul before Rosh Hashanah. He gets there in Boston. Rabbi Soloveitchik gives the first shiur, 6 hours. Everybody's glued to their seats. He's reading the Rambam, Hilchos Tkiyas Shofar, the most difficult Rambam. He explains everything. Everything fits into place. No kashas. He says, now he knows what an Eloi is. Give a shiur, rolls off of his tongue, 6 hours, and everybody follows from the beginning to the end. You don't get bored. He used to give the Yahrzeit Rosh 4 hours in a row. Everybody was glued to their seats. They were till the middle of the night, till 11, 12 at night. The people were prepared to sit another 2 hours to listen to more. He was such a fascinating speaker, and it took the most complicated din and it made them all simple. He simplified everything. Once he used to give a shiur every Matzoi Shabbos in Boston. He used to give a shiur in Parshas Hashavua. So there was a period of time that they was going to switch. So they asked him, what should they announce? What's he going to give a shiur? He said, he's going to give a shiur on Tehillim. So one of the Balabatim, a Pashit the Balabas, he says, but Rabbi, Tehillim is so easy. What are you going to say already on Tehillim? So he says, don't worry, Mr. Millen, I'll make it hard. He never made anything hard. The most complicated issue in Hashkofa, the most complicated issue in Halacha, his uniqueness was he made everything easy, and he showed you that's what it says in the words, that's the Pirush Amilas. Yeah, it's very unfortunate that's all being lost now, because so many people are want to gain popularity. They want the whole world to know that they're the star students of Rabbi Soloveitchik, so they're printing things inaccurately, even when it is accurate. But it's not the way he presented it. It wasn't his. If you look in some of the Svarim, they have haskamas on not from Rabbi Soloveitchik, they're from Rabbi David Feinstein, Gershon Zaks, other people. The people who knew Rabbi Soloveitchik's Torah would never give a haskama to this one. That's not the way Rabbi Soloveitchik said it. He lost out. Okay, you got to have mazel.
So, in the Rosh Yeshiva, can recommend anything that was the Rosh Yeshiva considered an accurate representation of what
the Rosh Yeshiva was?
Then maybe we'll
take
the question. They have a lot of tapes.
Because in 4 minutes.
4 minutes, good. Okay. Try it for this one.